Welcome back to Warren Williams Coaching.com, the Whole Being series. It's been a little while since I've done a blog. I've been really busy grading. Sorry, guys. I'm going to try and get back on this and do blogs or podcasts a lot more often. But anyway, moving on, this podcast, I'm really happy to have welcomed a guy that I've been aware of for probably about 3 or 4 years for his work with Paul Check as a competitive kettlebell lifter. And his name is Mike Salimi. So just a bit of a background of this guy. Mike Salimi became introduced into the world of competitive powerlifting at the age of 15. And by the time he was 19 years old, he became a world champion in powerlifting, which is just amazing. He's worked with Paul Check a lot. That's because he had a lot of injuries relating to lifting, and he was introduced to one, my coach Paul Check, and helped him heal a long-standing injury. He worked with Paul Check for about 2.5 years, and in that time, he still uses him as a consultant now. In that time, he helped to refine his technique, and he actually developed a kettlebell lifting course with Paul Check for the Check Institute. With regards to kettlebell training, he is a highly respected, qualified kettlebell instructor, as he has gained the certification of Master of Sport, which can only happen through competitive lifting. When you go into a competition, you have to lift a certain amount of weight in a consecutive cycle. So he became a Master of Sport, and I think he lifted 36 kilogram kettlebells. You have to lift them a certain amount of times consecutively within a 10 minute span. You cannot put them down. He's one of a very small group of people in North America to achieve that task. In 2017, he became the WAKSC World Champion in the long cycle in kettlebell lifting. And there's only four or five people in North America to actually have ever attained that title. He's trained in Russia for kettlebell certifications. He's basically trained quite a lot around the world. He's an LDOA level 3 practitioner. LDOA is a specific type of technique to help stretch the fascia. And he's a Supleless Pro instructor. Supleless, a different type of kit that are very functional. You'll learn more about that in our talk. So I'm giving you this background just so you can realize how much knowledge that this guy has when it comes to practical information. So it's not about letters on a paper, it's about practical information. And this guy has a lot of practical information. He's very much like me in that he has spent a long time becoming immersed in physicality and developing his motor skills. So I wanted to kind of get Mike on because I've heard a lot about him over the years, and we've exchanged emails over the years, but his breadth of knowledge when it comes to practical movement is amazing. But we talk about practical movement, we talk about maturity as you go through pain and how pain is an insight to transformation. And we talk a lot about how he kind of grew his practice and what he learned from pain. So there's a lot of information in here. It's all about background and how you can grow through pain. We get deeper into other things as well. As you guys know, I always go into the mind and spirituality. So I'm gonna get Mike on for a lot more talks over the next year. But I think this is a good introduction into Mike and to how he kind of became very good at working at the highest level of elite movement, biomechanics, and function. Hope you guys enjoy. Hey guys, I'm very, very grateful to finally kind of meet this guy, someone that I've been wanting to meet for a long time. And I don't want to kind of botch your surname, so I want you to say your surname before I continue my introduction. So this guy is a functional wizard, but I'd like you to say your name first.
Yeah, Salemi is my last name. Okay, kind of so, like salami, but with just like my nickname growing up was always Salami Mike. Right. But Mike Salemi is the way it's pronounced.
So for some of you guys that have watched my videos on YouTube and podcasts and stuff, you've seen me interview different people, but I've never really gotten a chance to really interview somebody who's who's an elite level athlete in the true sense of the word. So just to kind of inform everybody at the start of this kind of talk, kind of can you kind of walk us through your life, how you got into fitness? Initially start with how you kind of got into fitness in the first place.
Certainly. I mean, for as long as I can remember, I've always been an athlete. I think, you know, it started with my brother. My brother was a gymnast since he was probably 4 or 5 years old. And then I got into gymnastics when I was about 7. And I would say across my whole journey as an athlete, be it different sports, I've always been so blessed to have amazing coaches. And when I started in gymnastics, in the early years, like my coach was a guy named Krasimir Dunev. And Krasimir was a Bulgarian Olympian. He competed in, for sure, in Barcelona and in Atlanta. And in Atlanta, he was the first person ever to do 6 release moves on the high bar consecutively at that time. And I remember he grew up in the kind of the Soviet system. And from a young age, you know, he was our coach pretty much. He stayed here after the Atlanta Games. Just we all us kids in the gym always wanted to be like him. And so he was pretty much eating. He wasn't taking any supplements at the time. He was pretty much eating whole foods. And I just had the picture of like who I wanted to be growing up. And that's really what started kind of like my interest in physical health and physical fitness. And, you know, after that, I had gotten injured. You know, it's interesting. Like we were briefly talking before the call about the pain teacher. We kind of touched on that. But that's the pain teacher shown up at so many times during my life and have kind of been points of transition. And when I was 15 years old, I pretty much did gymnastics till right in the early years of high school in America. And I had injured my lower back. And a chiropractor who helped rehabilitate me, you know, told me, he goes, let's get you healthy. And, you know, I think you're pretty darn strong. I'm also a competitive power lifter. And this guy's name was Mike Ludovico. He was at the time the drug-free, in one of the organizations, one of the main organizations, the drug-free bench press champion of the world. Stocky guy, just like, just an incredible, incredible, just phenom of an athlete in that sport. And, you know, when I went to the gym and competed around, we were a very, very tight-knit, small powerlifting team. There was probably like 16 to 18 of us who all had a key to the gym. And that's, I would say, really where I grew up. Was like around lifters. We were all, it was always a team environment. And one of the lifters there was actually best friends with the owner of a holistic lifestyle center. Right. And he goes, man, you're like, you're really into this powerlifting stuff. I was pretty much at 15, 16, pretty much programming for the entire gym. We had a few world champions there. And I had always loved studying Louis Simmons' work and really anyone, Poliquin's work. And when I went to, he brought me over to this holistic lifestyle center, and it was an amazing experience because at that age, around 17 or 18, the whole gym, and we're talking 15 plus years ago, was modeled after the Czech principles. And unfortunately, the gym's no longer around, but the owner of the gym, we had Czech practice, we had Johnny Suarez, who I believe. He was the guy who really, he's been, we can talk, I'd love to talk about Johnny later, how instrumental he's been for me, but Johnny, I met him there. I met Stephanie, one of our mutual friends there. I was exposed at such a young age to hypnotherapists, very, very just amazing chiropractors, great personal trainers, assessments, nutrition and lifestyle coaching. And so I started becoming a personal trainer at, it was called Optimal Fitness Center, Optimal Fitness and Lifestyle Center. And I started becoming a strength and conditioning coach there. And in exchange for essentially powerlifting lessons to the owner of the gym, Brian, he really kind of brought me under his wing and kind of started teaching me about, he gave me Paul's book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. And that's really where I would say I got kind of my start in terms of being exposed to at least the kind of more holistic rounds of training. And then from, you know, powerlifting, I won the world championships in powerlifting when I was 19, then transitioned in college to Olympic weightlifting and had just an amazing coach there, Jim Schmitz, who was our 3-time Olympic U.S. coach. And then got into kettlebells, which I'm sure we'll talk about there, and was fortunate enough to train in Russia with the national team there. And now I'm just trying to, you know, just learn as much as I can. The main population of people that I'm working with are mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu practitioners, taekwondo athletes, so that's kind of like a very abbreviated version of the developmental stages of kind of what's got me here right now.
So at what age did you get to the point where you were starting? Because you mentioned Paul's book and at 19 being a powerlifting champion and stuff, world champ, which, I mean, you kind of just said those like, you know, I went to school at 19, you know, really basic, like, yeah, you know, I went to school at 19, but you're like, I'm the world champion at 19. That's like, stop for a second, hold on, you became the world champion in powerlifting at 19? That is incredible. You know, it's like, one of the really interesting things about all this sort of stuff is, you know, especially for me, meeting people like yourself that are, you know, in the top 1% of the world at what you do, you always have had to go through an intense learning. Something that someone taught me, a saying that someone taught me years ago, when someone comes up to you and says, how can you possibly be that good or know that much? And he said, the answer to that is always, I've taken a long walk and a very short path. You condense so much information in such a short period of time. And it's always interesting that the people that are so skilled like yourself have immersed themselves in so many things. I mean, I was just writing down all these things. I went to Russia, trained with the Russian team, world champ, powerlifting at 15, hypnotherapist, gymnastics. You know, it's so much stuff in such a short period of time. You know, and you know, you're relatively, you know, you're still young, like what, you're like 32, something like that?
31, yeah, you nailed it.
So, I mean, you've done so much in such a short period of time, and that's where, you know, you start to see and realize that certain people are masters, because, you know, as we know, there are people that are very good at one thing, and that one skill is what they kind of hide behind them. Whenever they're pushed into something else that they're uncomfortable with, they don't want to be exposed by their flaws, whereas we want to embrace our flaws and say, what can I do to make me better, whatever it is, whether it's breathing, or if it's Tai Chi, or if it's hypnotherapy, what is it that can make us better so we strengthen our weaknesses to become, you know, our strengths. And you know, I just find this stuff fascinating that you've gone through so much in such a short period of time, which is so, you know, one of the reasons why I was kind of pumped to kind of talk with you. Like I said at the start, yeah, I speak to a lot of people that are very good nutritionally or very good theory-based people, but not somebody who is actually such a high elite athlete, because, you know, I wanted to get your perspective from somebody who actually does work at this high level, which is why I'm kind of excited to kind of go for this interview with you. And just, I want to say to my listeners, you know, I've seen a lot of Paul's work with you, and I've been fascinated by the kind of stuff that he's been taking you through over years. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but just going back a little bit, I wanted to kind of touch on, so I know we've kind of touched on Paul a little bit. What kind of led you to want to work with Paul? I know it was related to an injury or something while you were lifting. Can you share that for a little while?
Sure. So when I started competing, it's been almost, give or take, 9 years that I've been a competitive kettlebell sport lifter. And in kettlebell sport, there's different rankings, just like any other sport, let's say. And one of the highest ranks is called master of sport. And it's designated by a specific number of repetitions based off of the kettlebell weight you use and your weight class. And I had been trying for almost, give or take, 4 years, had always come very close to, maybe 3 and a half years, getting very, very close to this level of master of sport, but always falling short, because it wasn't even in just competition, but at any difficult effort in the gym and training, which of course you have to go through if you want to win, if you want to be a champion, I essentially, my left arm, forearm would completely swell, filled with blood, be an extremely painful sensation. I'd have to drop the bells. Right. So within, you know, 3, 4, 5 repetitions, I would get close, and it was such an emotional roller coaster for so many years that, you know, I went through almost 9 to 10 different practitioners, and I always tell people, like, they were all great people. I tried to see the very best people that I could get my hands on or travel to. I mean, you name it. Cranial sacral therapists, Rolfers, acupuncturists, just anyone who could possibly help. And in every single practitioner, like, I really do believe, and this doesn't just, for me at least, doesn't just apply to like the self-healing modalities, but whatever it is that we do, we have to give it our full energy and our full effort to determine if it's something that's really working or not. So for the Rolfer, like, I worked with him 3 months consistently, you know, did 10 sessions plus, and I didn't want to do any other therapy during that time because I wanted to see would this one modality, would this one healing tool be the one thing that would, you know, solve the problem.
Yeah.
that's also why it took so long, but also why I appreciate my work with Paul that much more, because not only did I try one session of acupuncture, no, I tried, you know, months of just acupuncture, months of cranial sacral, no, cranial sacral was a little less, but at least five sessions. And, you know, no one could figure out exactly what it was. Learned a lot about myself. It was an amazing experience. But I got to the point where I had signed up for HLC2. And, you know, at the end of HLC2, we have our chi sticks that we sign as Tet practitioners. Commitment to meditation, as you know, to Paul. And it was the only opportunity that I could get. I mean, the class was packed. I think we had maybe give or take 40 to 50 easily people from around the world. Everyone wants a piece of Paul, right?
Yeah,
celebrity in the room. And I didn't want to be that guy that was just, you know, can you fix me? I just, you know, I didn't want to be that guy, but I just come off a competition where at the end of the competition, I remember just being in my hotel room and just crying and just being like, it had happened on so many competitions that I was just like, I don't know what to do. The docs had said either, well, one, they wanted to do surgery because what it ended up being was mainly, although it was derived from a few other things, it was a compartment syndrome in my arm. And so essentially what they wanted to do was cut the fascia and release the pressure. And I was like, man, I just knew that surgery was not, like, I just didn't want to go that route. I wanted to exhaust every means, every measure before. Or they said, stop the sport that you love.
Yeah.
Or they love, they just stop. And I said, well, sorry, I don't really accept both. I don't accept either. And at the end of HLC2, you know, I got in line and Paul was signing my stick. And I said, I know this isn't the appropriate place to do this, but do you have 2 seconds? This is what's going on. This is where I'm struggling. I would love to make an appointment with you or just have you take a look at what's going on. And in just a matter of just literally maybe a minute, I don't know, just standing in line, he felt my forearm. Palpated, asked me a few questions, and he goes, you know, I'm not positive. I have to get you on my table. I can't promise you anything, but I do believe I know what's going on. You know, try and make an appointment with Vidya. And so I contacted Vidya, and it almost took me 3 months to get in with him. He's obviously super busy, and then they were moving the institute at that time. But, you know, from my first, you know, from my first session, like, within honestly just a few minutes of him feeling and then him seeing me lift because he wanted me to bring kettlebells down and observe me perform my movements, he was like, I think I got it. I'm pretty sure I got it. And to be honest, as much as I respected Paul at that time and still do now, of course, I was a little skeptical because, you know, when you get injured and you see so many people for so many years and every single person is like looking at you like, my way is the way, like, oh, I can fix you, I can heal you, the Rolf, and all these people, and they're great people, nothing against them. But when you hear that so many times, like, you know, you invest a lot into it, and
I'm
at the point where I was just like, okay, you know, I'm hoping for the best, but Paul's approach, because it includes so many different modalities and so many different techniques and so many different perspectives, like, what I found was, you know, the Rolfer was just looking at me through the lens, through the goggle of the Rolfer. The upper cervical chiropractor, amazing dude, amazing technique, was looking at me. Everything that was going on in my body was through that lens, the cranial sacral. And Paul was the first person that was essentially treating me like a whole person and not necessarily promising me anything until he got me down there. And he still said, I still can't promise you. We have to work. And he goes, I have to learn about you. I've got to study you. It's going to take me some time. And still he didn't promise me anything, but he says, I've got a pretty good idea. And, you know, he was right. And so it was a compartment syndrome. And, you know, if you fast forward, you know, I pretty much worked one-on-one with Paul as not only like my corrective coach, but my nutrition and lifestyle coach, my kettlebell coach, my just overall coach for 2.5 years. Where I would fly down once a month to work with him for usually one full day. Until the point we both felt I got to a place where I was ready to kind of spread my wings and kind of still use him, of course, as a consultant, and I still do, but really kind of take off and take off myself.
Fascinating. And just one thing on that, What I'm interested in, one thing I'm really interested in is, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you mentioned about your technique. I think I've read it in one of Paul's blogs that your lifting technique had to be modified in some way. Your lifting technique itself.
Sure. Yep.
So just give me an example about one exercise that, like, I don't know, maybe a snatch, that how would he have modified it for you? Is it looking at your technique and basing it on your physiology, or was it just the lifting technique itself in general didn't work for anybody, or was it specific to your body?
That's a great question. So, you know, when I first came to Paul, I was using more of a classic kettlebell sport technique. And there's a few, you know, every single sport's going to have their own compensations, and especially their own compensation strategies to reach a high level of success. And kettlebell sport, for maybe if people listening in aren't familiar with it, it's a pretty challenging sport. We have, you know, there's a few different events, but the main event that I compete in and really excel at is the clean and jerk. And so we have two kettlebells. Now I compete at a few different weights, but the main professional level is 232-kilo kettlebells, so one in each arm. You repeat a clean and jerk where you swing the bell through the legs, clean it to the chest, and then jerk overhead. And you repeat that motion as many times as possible with some judges making sure they're legal and technical reps in 10 minutes. Yeah. You can't rest. The bells can't stay by your waistside. You can only rest at the chest or overhead. So you really never have a rest.
And I want to kind of pause for a second here, because you're giving this, you know, the listeners a kind of viewpoint in this, but I don't think they really know how that is. The only thing I can kind of give people that would make them kind of understand to a very minimal degree of how hard that must be is, imagine you've got a suitcase and the suitcase strap breaks and you could no longer pull it along the floor, and you've got to walk from one end of the terminal all the way to the other end, and it might take you 5 minutes. Imagine you got to pick that sucker up and just hold it for the next 5 minutes in one hand, and then the other hand you got a two-year-old baby, so you can't put it down, and you've got to go from one end of the airport all the way to the other end, and you might think, damn, I want to put this down, this is killing me. Magnify that times 50 and you'll probably understand what the heck Mike's talking about here. That's what it's operating, because people probably think, oh, that's not bad, 10 minutes isn't bad, but it's relative. 10 minutes doing something hard is hard. So anyway, sorry, continue.
No, I love that. Just made me think of one of my MMA athletes that I work with came to support me in a large competition maybe like a year ago. And usually where we warm up and where we compete, the platforms are not super close. It might be in the back of a gym or in another like building next door. And so we all help each other out. So he asked me, he goes, oh, you want me to carry your bells up to the platform for you? Which we usually do as friends and stuff like that to help us out so we don't waste any energy. Mm-hmm. And I go, sure. And this is a Bellator 10-2 fighter.
Wow.
Just a beast, Adam Piccolotti. And he was just carrying them, and he just gave, at that time I was competing in that one at double 40 kilo belt. And so he's just like, after he saw me, he's like, man, I got so much more respect for you than I've felt. So it's definitely heavy weight. And certainly is a ball buster for sure.
So you were saying with the clean and jerk, so what, Paul modified your technique specifically for you?
So what we had found was one of the things, so there was many things that was contributing to the compartment syndrome. One was I had a really big imbalance between the phasic system and the tonic system. So being a power lifter and just being a fast twitch athlete, and I still would say I am, like my motor is so much bigger, relatively speaking, compared to my stabilizers. So I could go like hell out of the gate. But in order to sustain that for 10 minutes was a very, very big challenge. So what would happen is, especially due to some overtraining as well, you know, I would get 1 to 2 minutes in the set and I would just get so shaky. Mm. Like my stabilizers would be fried, and then my prime movers would act as stabilizers, which obviously they're not designed to do. Mm. So the first thing that he did, from not including, let's say, the diet and lifestyle stuff or any of the mental emotional stuff, but from just a pure physical perspective, the first thing he did was a full-blown corrective phase to rebuild and to try and balance out my stabilizers.
Right, tonic and phasic.
And then even just that, even if I had just done that only and then added into the technique I was already using, I would have noticed, I know, tremendous benefit.
Right.
But we combined that with essentially, it was more or less like of an Olympic technique, where it would kind of think of like more Olympic weightlifting, and we weren't using a classic kettlebell sport rack position where we rest the elbows on the iliac crest, which is more of a compensation strategy, pretty much only used like in specific situations for lifting. So he really removed me for almost a year plus from the classic style of kettlebell sport lifting techniques. And I will say, like, I got probably while I was in that sport, probably the strongest that I'd ever been and most functionally strong. And so, you know, I was competing with this technique, but what we found was it's even though my arm pump and my compartment syndrome had pretty much resolved itself for the most part, you know, I was stronger and healthier than I'd ever been, but I still couldn't compete at the world championship level compared to these other guys because all these other lifters were using these specific strategies that we use in competition. And so Paul came to one competition and observed the lifting there. Yeah, which was, and that was, you know, I think, and I would love to talk about even just like some of the things I've learned as a coach and just having Paul go to the competition and really just observe the environment. Gave him a whole new perspective. Even though I was telling him, it's just certain things that you just observe, right? So I was healthy again. I pretty much resolved myself of injury. I had a great, great foundation now. And then from there, we started playing with, okay, what are maybe some strategies we can use to combine both styles? Maybe during a set, we start more orthopedic, more Olympic type style. And then we transition when you're gassed to... So it took me a long time to kind of figure out what has been the right recipe for me. And now where I'm at, because now, like, at least for specifically kettlebell sport only coaching, the main coach that I work with is a guy named Dennis Vasiliev, who is the 8-time world champion. And what's been so neat about him is I would say, and I've shown Paul, like when I've shown him, when we would sit down, look at videos of some of the Russian lifters and some of the best of the best, Dennis, of all of them, at least maybe there's two or three, but Dennis, in my experience, has the most Olympic-style technique of all of them. And so pretty much the style that I'm using now is kind of a combination of a lot of the things I learned from Paul with what I'm doing with Dennis. So there is definitely that kind of rack position, that classic rack position. But if you notice, as opposed to in kettlebell sport, when we use these strategies, we use very exaggerated curvatures.
Right.
Like we have to go in extreme kyphosis, sway, like these things we have to adapt to. But Dennis uses a much more Olympic style posture, so much more vertical, much more stacking one joint over the other. So I found that to be much less stressful. And then when you combine that with all the recovery modalities and strategies and self-healing things that I learned from Paul, now I'm starting to feel, and I'm still evolving, like I still have so much to learn as an athlete, but I think like what's becoming my style of lifting is just constantly refining. Like the better I get, the better, like even if I were to go back right now to work a full day with Paul, I'm sure I would learn a ton more now being where I am now and maybe even what I'm ready to absorb right now as a coach and as a lifter. So I wouldn't say, I would say it's constantly changing. And constantly evolving.
Yeah, I think there's so much to cover with that. I think that, man, we've got so much to talk about. Jeez. You know, one of the things I always note, and, you know, I'm a massive Bruce Lee fan, and, you know, I'm always talking about, you know, when Paul talks about when he, with his vision, you know, he says he has so much depth to his vision. You know, he sees so much more than most people. So, you know, you saying that him coming to environment, it's so important to see little intricacies like the environment, the heat, all that sort of stuff to take into account how you're going to design a program. And, you know, with his depth of vision, I remember just talking about what you were saying about learning more as you get more experienced. I won't say older because you're so young, but as you get more experienced. I remember Bruce Lee had this saying, I always quote this all the time. And he said, you know, when I started martial arts, this is Bruce Lee now, he said, when I started martial arts, I thought a punch was a punch and a kick was just a kick. As I started to get deeper into martial arts, I realized a punch was more than a punch and a kick was more than a kick. Once I'd mastered the aspect of martial arts, I realized a punch was just a punch and a kick was just a kick. It moved back into beautiful simplicity. It looked complex until it became simple again, and it looked simple when you didn't have the eye. You know, and it's like what you're saying, it's like, you know, you, it's like your perspective, it's almost like, you know, as you get older, your perspective increases because of the depth of knowledge of your understanding of doing the lift for thousands and thousands of hours. And then it might just be a slight torque with your finger or your wrist or a breath or a relaxation in your opposite shoulder, and all these things can just change the dynamics of the lift, which is so important for elite performance. And, you know, I don't know if you know much about boxing. There's a guy called Bernard Hopkins. Legend, you know, he started boxing at 24 after he left jail. And by that time, Mike Tyson was already been a champion 3 years. And this guy was just starting. But, you know, he retired at 50. He broke the world record for the oldest fighter to win a world title. He won his last world title at 48. You know, and he was just talking about how when he was, and this is kind of the thing I kind of want to move on to, relating back to still fitness and training, is one of the things that he said was, you know, he realized in his older years that, you know, he used to just fresh his body and just get through with sheer willpower, which we know a lot, you know, and you know, just talking to a lot of, working with a lot of MMA fighters, a lot of these people think it's normal to be injured and just to get through it with willpower because that's just what comes to the territory. You're always injured, just train through it. And, you know, one of the things that he said was, you know, when he was younger, he used to train like 3 hours per session. And then he said, but I'm training for a 36-minute boxing match. He goes, now that he's older, he's, you know, looking back and he's like, I only need to train for 36 minutes. I'm fighting for 36 minutes. You know, why am I training for longer than that? He goes, I'm in the gym and I laugh at these young guys that are training for 3 hours. I just need to train for 36 minutes. That's how long I'm fighting for. And that's how he got his longevity, because he could look back at it and look at refining things. And, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, who's another guy that I really like, you know, he said, one of his phrases that he said was, smarter, not harder. And I adapted that into my system. And it's true. It's like, why am I just, you know, just breaking myself down as opposed to finding a smarter way or a better way to do it? And, you know, Joe Rogan, you know, he did a podcast recently with Faraz Zahari, GSP's trainer.
I haven't caught that, but yeah, a bunch of my friends have sent me that one. I gotta listen to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've only listened to snippets of it, but, you know, just tying it into what you're saying, I want to kind of get back to you now. But he was, Faraz Zahabi was talking about, I call it cross shit. Oh, my students always laugh. I call it cross shit, not CrossFit. And he was talking about it, and he said, you know, the thing about it, his issue with, I'll just call it CrossFit for a second, but his issue with it is that it's, you know, it's all about one rep max every single session, killing yourself, and, you know, having no energy at the end. He said, there's no way you can be elite as a CrossFitter and at the same time elite as an MMA fighter, because you have to give somewhere. He said, you can't be able to, you know, work 100% at CrossFit and then work 100% at MMA, because you're just breaking your body down in both fields. He said, you have to be able to be using CrossFit kind of as a kind of, you know, a rainbow bridge for your MMA, not become elite in both. And you see, look at all these CrossFitters, the reason why they get injured is because they're constantly breaking themselves down, because every exercise or every routine or every training session is 100% max. And you said, you can't train like that. You have to oscillate. You have to have rest periods. You have to have, as Paul says, your winter, you know, when he talks about the different stages or phases of our yearly cycle. So, let me just pause for a second. So I wanted to kind of, I know there's a lot to say. I kind of wanted, let me just...
Warren, you broke up right there, brother.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Last point.
Yeah, let me just say that again, because I might have to pause that bit. So, you know, he talks about, you know, this cycle, this, you know, this, as Paul talks about this winter and having this oscillation of exercise and rest. So I kind of summarize that into one little thing that I want to throw back to you, because you were talking about, you know, athletes and training. You know, and a lot of times athletes work and they are injured and they think injury is normal, it's part of the territory, and they just use pure willpower to get through their training sessions even though they may be injured. So from your point of view, from your experience, you know, is it normal to train injured, and if so, what can you do about that? Is there a better way?
Yeah, what you bring up for me there is, you know, a few things. One, like, I see, and this is what really excites me about working with athletes, especially even the MMA ones, because that's the population I really am excited about right now. I see so much untapped potential in these guys, because these guys have the willpower, the mindset, the work ethic.
Yeah.
And if you just get them just to go to sleep an hour earlier, or to just eat a little bit better food, it's like, these guys are amazing, and it's like what they could be is could be so much more. And as it relates to injury, I think I do feel like, you know, everyone's journey is different, and I think everything has a purpose, especially in the injuries. And most oftentimes, I think as athletes, we find kind of the light at the end of the tunnel, or the other side, through injury. Because it's like through every injury, I went on to the next quote unquote greater thing, if you want to call it that. And then I found Paul. Yeah. So it's like my overtraining, my lack of self-management or lack of awareness or whatever, like brought me to Paul. And now I'm able to share, you know, my experience, my knowledge. And I don't think I would have, maybe I would have found Paul, but I don't know. I don't know if I would have gone that depth. So I think it all has a purpose, but I would say as like an ongoing thing, one of the things, one, you know, I just got back from spending 3 weeks in Boise, Idaho. And in Boise is the headquarters of Supless Training System, where Coach Ivan Ivanov has like a wrestling school. And one thing that I was so amazed with when I was there was, so Ivan was a former Bulgarian Olympian in Greco-Roman wrestling and was one of the U.S. Olympic coaches.
Right. Wow.
And one of the things that I was so, and I pretty much hopped into, I was there for almost 3 weeks. They have the national championships this upcoming week, I believe it is. And so I was there for like their hardest of the hard training camp for his wrestlers. Then I was there during his taper week. And then I left. Mm. And so one, I just wanted to go to learn more about all the tools and the training he uses, but also how he structures training for, we had the Olympic gold medalist from Serbia there, world champion from Serbia as well. We had a national team member. So we had some elite level athletes. And just to see, you know, there's so many routes to the top and everyone kind of has their way. But one of the things that I was really impressed with him in particular and from the experience was, you know, his guys don't usually get injured. Like I was so blown away at the intensity and how they were pushing. But then I also realized, you know, having been around wrestlers and how especially they wrestle like in Russia and Dagestan and stuff like that, their pace, their volume. His is very different. He gets these kids out in a park, out in the fresh air, at least 2 to 3 days a week, get them out of the gym. At least 4 days a week, these kids' warm-ups were games. Dodgeball, butt ball. He incurred 20, 30 minutes playtime. He encourages them, much like Paul had with me, get in the pool, wiggle around, move around, you know, use that as recovery. You know, everyone has what, you know, healthy nutrition is to him. But he would at least ask them, you know, did you guys eat breakfast? Did you guys go to sleep? And for him, he would much rather, you know, his guys go into competition with gas in the tank than feeling spent. And so to see his taper week where the volume really dropped, where they focused on more techniques, drilled, still stayed strong. But I was really amazed. And what I saw was, one, how he's made so many champions through that methodology. And then two, honestly, how much love and respect his athletes have for him, because they know he's not just there to crush them.
Right.
And that was one thing I learned. I was like, wow, like these kids will go to war for you. And it's because he's not just, I mean, he's grinding them, but he's, you know, every Saturday is an active recovery day, a stretching day. Sunday is completely off. And he modifies all training based off how they're doing, very much like how Paul coached me in his own way. And so, it was just a really interesting observation that I think today, right now, as a coach, one of the themes that I'm really, if I reflect on it, one of the things that I try and do as much as possible is how can we achieve more, more, more by doing less, less, less? And that even relates to even like a specific stretch, for example. It's like, how can we put ourselves in the very best position possible to experience, let's say, a hamstring stretch or whatever it is, without needing to go touching my forehead to my knee when my spine rounds. Is the stretch really coming from one of the hamstrings or is it going into the spine? So as much as possible, neither that way or selecting foods or whatever it may be, it's like, how can we make it get the very, very most from the very, very least? And I think that's where I'm seeing through these experiences, working with different coaches, then also kind of coming up with my own style that feels good for me, that I feel a synthesis of what's made sense to me as an athlete and in my own way. That's been a very, very true thing that I've been experiencing for sure.
So with all of what you said, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, like we say, when you're, you know, there's so much confusion when you're not in the top 1% in the world, because there's so much opinion that's untried at a true high level. And it, you know, always seems to me, when you're truly in the top 1%, everybody's saying the same thing, everybody's doing the same thing. It's everybody else that has the opinion that actually doesn't know. Because they, you know, they have that saying, those who know don't say, and those who say don't know. You know? So it's interesting, because even though it's not the four doctors, it kind of is. It's just not, you know, in the exact appreciated way. Like, they may not be doing Tai Chi, but like you said, they are doing mindfulness, like as you said, like active rest. So do you think, from your point of view, that, you know, the reason why they're not getting injured, I mean, you kind of said it, but I kind of wanted to summarize it for the people as well. It's because they're finding me time, downtime, active rest, and that's the kind of key that a lot of these elite performers are lacking. It's not about killing yourself in every session. It's also about, like you said, having reserves and finding downtime to be able to maintain a training camp.
I would certainly agree. That's definitely been my experience, because, you know, as Paul always says, you know, I remember he says, you can be a one-hit wonder, but it's like, what really truly matters is, like, can you repeat that year after year after year?
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, winning an Olympic gold medal, like, that's an incredible achievement, or a world champion, but it's like, you know, if your dream is only to do that once, then great.
Yeah.
But if you want it, it's a sport that you love, like, especially the martial arts. Like, everyone I know in martial arts loves it. Like, it's a lifestyle, the jiu-jitsu lifestyle, this lifestyle. And they want to do it until their older age. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can, or at least to the level that we would all love to do, if you don't have some form of a four-doctor approach.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you're not open. Like, Coach Yvonne was very open. He goes, can you give a nutrition talk to these guys? He goes, I can't do it, but I know it's important. And so that was the window that was open, and I absolutely shared with them, you know, my experience with the Czech approach and what it's done for me. And so, you know, I think the best coaches have their own, you know, methodology around this, but absolutely, like without sleep, without, you know, managing our thoughts, without managing our breathing, it's like, it's very hard to compete at a high level for, you know, more than a few years. Very, very hard.
So I kind of want to get back to that in a moment by talking to you about your actual approach with athletes and how you kind of work with them, what you know, key things you actually do with clients that kind of sets you apart from the normal strength and conditioning coach. But just because we touched on, inadvertently kind of touched on it in a way when we spoke about the pain teacher, I kind of wanted to, you know, tie this in when we talk about injuries, and injury creates self-reflection. And, you know, like, one of the things that our friend Polchek, you know, said to me, and he's probably shared with you as well, is, you know, when you get to a stage of change, when you have to change, one of two things happen. You either change and grow, or you go further into denial. And, you know, you keep repeating the same thing, but you just have to get better at lying to yourself. Because once you're faced with the truth, like, if we're talking about training for a moment, I know so many boxers that have trained in a specific way, and they've gotten beaten. And then all they did was they fired the coach. And then they did the exact same thing and got beaten again, to the point where they had 6 different trainers in a 3-year period. And they looked everywhere except themselves. And that's somebody who's gone further and further into denial, because every single time it happened, they had to justify it in their mind with another lie, which was lying to themselves about something that they weren't doing. Maybe they weren't sleeping on time. Maybe they overestimated or underestimated their opponent, whatever it was. They never looked at themselves. They never thought that the issue was with them. They always thought it was with the coach. It's something the coach has done wrong. So, you know, when we speak about pain, you know, pain is supposed to bring about some form of, as Paul says, pain is a synthesis for change, or also the synthesis for consciousness, which means you become aware of the pain and try to do something different. And we were talking off air about, you know, this is kind of like a form of a rite of passage for athletes, you know, facing the dilemma that what they're doing just isn't working. Can you just talk about your own experience with, I mean, you know, you've touched on it for yourself with pain and, you know, how it kind of brought about changes for you. But can you talk about that for yourself and or athletes in any way where you can explain how pain can kind of bring about a change in your life in general?
Yeah, I think for me, at least, the pain has brought, you know, one of the things I feel like, sometimes I've said this saying, like, a strong man is a vulnerable man. Yeah. And I don't know if I've been ever more vulnerable than those moments when I've been in the most pain.
Right.
And I think, too, like, one of the things that the pain, quote unquote, the pain teacher has taught me is to have a tremendous amount of empathy for others that are in pain. So I can very much relate to other athletes that have been in, whether it's an injured or, you know, mental, emotional pain, they're going through a relationship challenge, whatever it is, and how everything's interconnected. So for me, it's the pain has always, in whatever injury or whatever's happened, it's always been the stem of a new level of awareness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I was just thinking right now, like one of the things that I was amazed with the athletes in Boise was we had even young athletes, like Ivan's son's 9 years old. He's a national champion. And, you know, growing up, I did gymnastics, which was a fantastic, fantastic base for me. From an awareness, from learning courage, from skills, movement, etc. But honestly, you know, I really feel like I missed out as a kid not having done growing up in the early ages martial arts. Because like what I saw from these kids, the amount of adversity and pain and like quote unquote physical pain and getting out of their comfort zone, like it was a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Injured, but I was just like, you know, I was in the gym almost four times a day. I'd participate in the strength and conditioning session in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'd work two workouts in the afternoon. Now, this was a much, much higher load than I normally train at, but I was trying to get the most out of the experience. Mm-hmm. And in the evening, I would either participate or just sit down and observe wrestling practice. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away at the courage. You know, some kids, I mean, it was just an amazing experience. And I said to myself, the level of maturity that these kids and how much faster they're going to, quote unquote, get there, the maturity of a 9-year-old might as well have been a 15, 16, 17-year-old in normal society because he went through these, quote unquote, pain teachers, this rite of passage. And I was just like, wow, I really was just in awe. And I don't think I would have had, and I've been around martial artists and stuff, but I've never been around this type of environment. And to see what these guys went through, I was like, this is beautiful. Mm-hmm. This is just what these guys, the men that these guys are going to create. And also, you know, how to also be soft in these situations.
Yeah, yes.
Well, you know, some guys would cry off the mat, but they'd have the teammates go talk to them and calm them down and tell them it's okay. And just like, I was so just amazed at the level of bonding and respect and what this environment created. So, the maturity that these kind of rites of passage can create, but as well as this new level of awareness that these pain moments or pain teachers can create, I really feel are some of the biggest blessings that we get in sport.
Yeah. And, you know, we're theming this mainly based on sport. You know, we can translate directly into society and how, you know, for me and, you know, like yourself, as you just said, you know, when I teach a lot of the HLC internships, and I remember one of the times I was teaching and a guy was on there and he was, you know, talking through some deep stuff and he was crying, and you know, I kind of stopped the class and I said, seriously guys, that is good, because you know, in society today, men are, you know, frowned upon for crying. And you know, I remember Deepak Chopra, when Tony Robbins said to him, can you explain how you become invincible, and he said, the best way to become invincible is to become vulnerable, you know. And once you said, if you become vulnerable, you become invincible because you let go of everything. So what can hurt you? And as we know, there's so many men out there that are, they lack any form of self-growth. So they try to, you know, contend with that. They try to kind of focus on what they lack in internal growth by physical exercise, by, you know, putting on muscle, putting on size, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And it's like, you know, they're armoring themselves up because of what they lack in their own soul growth. So, you know, a personal development through the pain teacher is necessary to force people into a stage of maturity.
Yes, I love that, 100%.
Yeah, and I just think that's so important. So even though, you know, for the guys that listen, even though what we're talking about is sport is really life, because, you know, people will watch sport, they'll participate in sport for their own personal, you know, fitness. It doesn't have to be just competition-based, but, you know, everything translates. And, you know, one of the things I always say to people is everyone in the world should be interested in the four doctors. Whether or not you're going to be living it as a coach makes no difference, but not everybody has to be invested in accountancy, because there's always someone that can do that, but every person on the planet should be doing the four doctors. So this sort of stuff is important to everyone in general. So I kind of wanted now to kind of shift gears and talk more about Mike as the coach now. What kind of, through all the experiences you've gained from Paul, from your own training with the, you know, Russian kettlebells, from traveling all around the world and learning from all these masters, how do things kind of fit with you? How do you train people that kind of allows you to kind of work at the elite level? Because I know for me, you know, there aren't, and I'm going to preface this by saying I've worked with a lot of elite athletes, footballers, and, you know, they've had chiropractors and physios at big clubs, like big football teams, and, you know, multi-million-pound football teams. But the staff that they have are just out of the academy, like 1-2 years. So you immediately assume, but it's Manchester United or whatever big club. So they've got to have the best of the best. But they're doing the same crap that everybody else is doing. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of these athletes are breaking down, because, you know, they're all doing the same thing. So I think it's really good to kind of find out, because like I said, you're in the top 1% in the world. What are the things that you're doing that is so different? You know, so is it the, you know, how you integrate the Eldoa stuff, the corrective exercise, the holistic stuff, the kettlebell stuff, and then whatever other things you kind of integrate from all of your own learning? How would you kind of coach people, and how does that work?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's it depends what someone's coming to me for, or what they think they're coming to me for. Because usually that's going to be, for me, the door that's most open. So, like, I can't even tell you how many times, you know, people have come to me for Eldoas, and that's been the window that I've used to sprinkle the four doctors. Mm. And vice versa. You know, it's the way I pretty much work now is, you said it perfectly. It's like what the biggest sports teams, the biggest athletes, it's not easy by any means, but usually it's the most basic things that they're not doing that are preventing them from reaching their highest level. And so the first, like, always start is four doctors, because it, no matter what they're doing, what strength and conditioning program they're doing, what stretches they're doing, whatever it is, if they're not sleeping, if they're not managing themselves, it's like, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but it's like the results that they could be achieving, or at least the speed at which they get to their dream or their goal or whatever they're trying to work through, could be so much faster. So usually, depending on what the door is that's most open, that's what I work on, because I do feel that developing trust is a process, and it's one of the most important things to develop over time with people. And then also compliance, because we could have the greatest program in the world, you know, whether it's strength and conditioning, Eldoa, four doctors, but if they're not motivated to do it and they don't trust you as a coach, then it really doesn't matter, because we're here for them, not for us. And so for me, I kind of just pick, I'm usually brought into, let's say, a camp or something like that, depending on what's needed. A lot of times, like in one of the last camps I was in, you know, they had a strength and conditioning coach, they had a nutrition guy, and so I said, fine, that's no problem. I'll just be your quote-unquote durability coach. So I gave some HLC stuff, some four doctor stuff, Eldoa stuff, and it was great. Got this guy through the fight. He was like, wow, now I know he's going to work with me for the next few years. So I kind of like, I try and just plant seeds, but, you know, as much as possible, I'll always at least point the seeds in terms of getting someone on the four doctors to start with, or at least whatever they're most open to. I start there. And then I kind of branch out there, and it's got to be a very individualized approach, but also a team approach, because like even to, you know, to be honest, like I definitely do assessments, for example, but there's people far better than me. Like, for example, like Johnny Suarez is the guy who, he's really the one who said, you know, he was the one quarterbacking my whole health and healing journey when I saw those nine practitioners. So he was kind of the quarterback saying, okay, like we've assessed you, try Rolfing, try this. And then after we exhausted everything, he goes, you know what, this is out of my scope, this is out of these guys' scope, I think it's time you go see Paul. And, you know, if it's a case that's beyond me, it's like, or if even someone doesn't have the money to work with me, but I think that they need to see an upper cervical or someone is knowledgeable, like a check level three or check level four, get assessed. The most important thing is the client. So I'll always say, like, go see Johnny. And then Johnny, through a team approach, will create a badass program for you. So now my style is very much health is the foundation for high performance. Always start there. Work through the door, the window that's most open. And then develop a team approach that's really focused around the individual and not so much about me or making me look good. Because as long as I'm supporting them in their dream, then that's the most important thing. Because their goal and their dream and their health and happiness is above all, you know, what we're here to do as coaches. So that's kind of a, I'd say like a brief little scope, but that's really how I work with people.
Do you work, is it, I'm asking you questions, I know the answer to this really, but obviously I got to throw it out there. You know, how you work with people is obviously dependent on the person and the issue. Do you ever work on Skype with people or is it always in person because you want to do all the physical stuff with them?
At this point in kind of my career and what I'm doing right now, I've got a few one-on-ones, but I've really scaled that back. I only keep like a select 3 to 5 top athlete clients who are on board with the system, who will do all the work. And that just allows me to practice at a deeper level. So I can really practice the whole scope. But most, I would say that's a very small percentage right now. I don't do much on Skype, a little bit, but most everything is now just trying to travel, teach workshops, teach certifications, get the word out, kettlebells, Bulgarian bags, holistic lifestyle and nutrition. But really right now I'm just traveling, spreading the word. As I've been working on an online kettlebell program for almost 6 months, and I'm kind of at the tail end of it. So in the next few months, I'm so excited to release that because I think, you know, even though the online medium is not perfect, like there's nothing that substitutes for a one-on-one and in person, but in terms of reach and just starting to kind of sprinkle these things out there, I'm really excited to kind of reach and touch more people. So that's kind of more or less how I'm operating right now.
So I want to kind of get back to that in a little bit, the online and the stuff that you're doing in the future. Obviously, you know, coming to the UK and stuff, so we'll talk about that in a bit. Just because we're talking about the exercise stuff and how you work with people, what's your, because I, you know, I really want to get people to know your perspective on, you know, on athlete, you know, on elitism in the functional way. What's your, because I, you know, we spoke off air when I was talking about your interview with Mind Pump, and you were just talking about, you know, a lot of your stuff with regards to how you get people to implement specific types of rest to improve their creativity, but also performance. So what's your theory on rest and performance, and how do you kind of allow, how do you get people to kind of do more, you know, spiritual sort of restful, stretchy type of exercises whilst they're so focused on performance? Because I know for me, a lot of these people think, well, if we're wasting 20 minutes, because they say it's waste, if you're wasting 20 minutes doing all this fluffy stuff, that could have been 20 minutes doing all this lifting stuff. So how do you kind of cross that bridge? How do you get them into the spiritual component of active rest or, you know, that sort of stuff?
I think, well, one of the things that's coming up for me right now, the most important thing is just living it myself, because I feel like leadership of that, you know, if you live it, you look vital, you look healthy, you're performing. Like there's no, and that's one of the things, the reasons why attracted me to Paul is because he's a living, breathing example of what he teaches. So there's that initial, whether it's conscious or subconscious, you know, if you're vibrant, healthy, happy, and like coming in with a smile, people wanna do that. So I think the first thing, because you could put someone on, which one of the things I'll share is the working in, which has been a great strategy for me. But, you know, you could put someone on the best working in program, but if you're not doing, like, there's going to be, if you're not doing it or you don't fully buy into it, like, that's going to come through to the person. So I'd say the first thing is living it and eating it. And then the second thing is, especially with the athletes, is getting them to do these things when they don't think they're doing it. Working in, at least in my experience, has been one of the most beneficial personally, but also professionally, ways to add in these self-reflective, healing modalities, spiritual connections, even when, you know, you don't even have to tell someone about, you know, you're going to grow spiritually by doing a, it's like, don't even say that. Yeah. Just let it happen. Yeah. And let them build the reps, let them build the repetition. And so for me, working in, taking even very familiar exercises, whether it's a kettlebell movement or something where we stay within the working in parameters, which is you're very familiar, the heart rate can't elevate, you can't sweat, you should be able to do it on a full stomach, your tongue should stay moist. So provided I give them some constraints or give them a little window, because they need some quote unquote rules or some guidelines. Yeah. I say within this, play, get creative. You know, there's a time to compete, but then we got to balance that out. So one of the ways is during the rest periods, even just getting them to do, you know, maybe if they're open to it, a stork walk outside. If we're training outside, I love the portable tools, because I can get some, whether it's kettlebells, Bulgarian bags, I can get them outside. We can train at the park. I can get them out of the gym, get them bare feet. And then I can just, even if it's just a slow walk on the grass for a rest period, that's good enough for me. Like, I'm so happy. If they do that every set. I was training Ben Greenfield a few months ago, and we were training like hard. I was taking him through a kettlebell workout. And it was his first experience, at least to my knowledge, doing work and exercises during rest periods.
Okay.
And, you know, he was really impressed. I said, but it started with me leading it. Yeah. Like, if I didn't, but like, I was like, no, this is what I do. This, you want to know what I do? This is what I do. So it's up to you if you want to hop in or not. But, and he was open to it. We just did breathing squats. So a squat movement, very familiar exercise, not threatening at all. And let's see how quickly you can make it a game, even how quickly you can get your heart rate down, your breath down. You're doing an intense set. I'm very proud of you for doing that. It's amazing, amazing feat. But now I want to see how quickly you can recover. Because if you can only do it once, then that's so good. But I want to see, can you do it 10 times with the same quality? Because when you look at a great lifter and a great athlete, one of the things that's always amazed me is, you know, the great lifter from rep 100 will look identical technique-wise to rep number one. And if you can, you know, not break down the system, and working in can be a great way, can be a great transition to incorporate working in or self-healing practices, working on our breath, calming things down, but also through movement, which especially through athletes and especially through society today, that's a very familiar and a non-threatening way. So once again, like that door that's most open, it's been one of the most valuable things. It was my transition as an athlete to meditation, to even just sitting meditation or laying meditation. I wasn't ready for that for a long time. And so I'd say, oh, forget this stuff. Like, I'm just not ready for it. But it wasn't, I just didn't have the right thing that fit my lifestyle or my style, my personality yet. And now I can do it no problem. I can sit down quietly for 20 or 30 minutes, but it started with the movement. So incorporating work-ins during rest periods, and then also allowing them to enjoy that. You know, really, this is for me, the working in is the period of celebration. Just like a meal following training, it's like this is the celebration. Yeah. We get to feel. You know, after you have a hard training session, your hands, like a deadlift, your hands vibrate, right? The nervous system.
Yeah.
And you breathe deeper than you've ever breathed. And it's like those moments are when I feel most alive and when I feel just the best. So working in as its own modality, but also interspersed within rest periods, have been one of the most valuable things I've incorporated.
I love what you explained just now, because it kind of gave me an image again. When, you know, you talk about repetitions, and I love what you just said, where you said, you know, the first rep should look exactly the same as the 100th rep. And that for me That's so powerful. You know, like I said to you off camera, these listeners are going to be like, how much stuff did you guys say off camera? God damn it. Yeah, we had a good chat off camera. It's like, that was yummy. We should have recorded that.
It's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We'll put that one on soon. But, you know, something, I love what you said, because, you know, it's like, you know, have me, myself working with elite athletes, you know, one of the things that makes people get injured is their technique breaks down. You know, people typically don't get injured like for football. They don't typically get injured at the start of a match. They typically get more injured in the second half or the end of the match, when they're starting to fatigue, and then their motor pattern pathways become ruined because they're not able to maintain the same level of skill from start to end. And like you said, when you look at the people that are the best, especially in lifting or anything, their technique looks exactly the same. They may be tired, but the technique just is so well trained. The fact that they're able to be resting in activity is what allows them to continue. So it's almost like, I always give people the example of ballet. And I'm like, do you really think that guy throwing that girl up in the air, do you really think he finds that easy? No, he just makes it look easy because of the training and the ability to relax and just look like it's not hard. And, you know, I think what you just said about the work in stuff and allowing that to allow the person to maintain the same level of skill from start to end is so important. I mean, I don't know if people really understand how important that is, because, you know, people don't get injured sitting at home watching TV. They don't get fit, but they don't get, unless that, you know, the roof falls down on them or something, they get injured moving. So if the first rep and the last rep are the same, it's less likely that they get injured. And I think that is such a key point for the elite athlete to understand. So this working component, as you've explained, is so invaluable to eliminate an injury through work, you know, or through monotony or repetition. You know, I think that is key. So I kind of wanted to just move on to talk about what you had just talked about, like where you're going with your business. Like, you spoke about the online stuff, and then also want you to touch on, you know, the courses that you're putting out, the Czech inspired kettlebell course that you kind of started with Paul. So let's start on that one first. How did you get into setting up? And obviously, you know, you and Paul had modified your techniques and stuff, but, you know, how did you get into it, and how was it for you teaching that very first kettlebell course that you taught?
Oh, it was great. It was great. It's, you know, pretty much, you know, in the kettlebell quote unquote world, like there tends to be, and I think in any modality anywhere, there tends to be a lot of dogmatic teachings. And what I've really learned as an athlete, as a coach, is that they're very, you know, it's never been my experience. There is no one way to the top. Because one, what is the top anyway? But there is no one way to the top. And so when I teach, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy is being able to offer different perspectives and telling people honestly, like, if you use this style, this is what it's good for. You know, this is what it's conducive for, but these are the detractors for it, or this is what it's going to set you up for. This style or this technique is good for this. So if that's your dream, you got to do that, but you got to know how to balance the body with all these other things. So it was the Czech, you know, the Czech course that I taught was such, you know, is a culmination of my life's work as an athlete. Because, you know, I've been exposed to so many different techniques, styles, coaches, training methodologies in the kettlebell world, that it was like, you know, my first way to kind of, you know, synthesize them all, but also present like what makes sense for me when someone's first learning. And then also I had a four doctor lecture in that course, which it's the only course that I know kettlebells that have talked four doctors. And it was only an hour maybe, but, you know, that's exactly, you know. And it was speaking off of, honestly, my own personal experience with it, because, you know, going back to what you were sharing earlier about repetitions, like, there's plenty of coaches far smarter than me, have far more accolades and everything like that from degrees and such. But the one thing that I have excelled at is just experience and just living this stuff. And, like, I would much rather, for me personally, work with a coach that is not maybe as intelligent intellectually, but has been working and living the stuff and training. And because that's the priceless part, because anyone can go read a book, but unless you've actually gotten into a clinch or gotten up close with a wrestler, unless you've experienced what they feel and you've put in the thousands of reps in one style, like, you could see something on YouTube and be like, very judgmental, like, oh, that's that. It's like, dude, but yes, but you can't even come close to fathoming the depth at what that technique is good for or not good for unless you've done it yourself and done thousands of repetitions. So the Czech course, and also the one that so right now we are planning on the weekend of October 13th and 14th for me to come to Czech Europe and at least do one day of a kettlebell workshop and possibly one day of a Bulgarian bag. It will very much be depending on the time and really, you know, I've got my plan for what I'd like to teach, but depending on what the students, the level of them and what they're most interested in learning, you know, I always have a structure when I teach, but I've learned to be more flexible in terms of who's there in front of me because, you know, I could plan to teach to advanced level practitioners, but if someone still is missing the fundamentals or wherever we got to go with it, so I'm also very flexible in that respect too. So the Czech course for me was such a joy because it was a culmination of my life's work of, you know, incorporating a system of systems in kettlebells via for doctors, but also from a technique standpoint and just being able to speak and being able to show people, like if someone's curious, hey, I want to learn, you know, that sports style. And I'll just tell them, honestly, that's not right for you, at least not right for you right now and not right for you until you lay down all these things first. But, you know, I can show them it, you know, I can show them and just let them give them that experience. So, yeah, it was such a joy. And it was almost two plus years creating that course. And it's constantly been evolving.
And how long is that course?
What's that?
How long is that course? How many days?
That one was 2 days that I did for the Czech Institute.
Yeah.
And the one that I'll teach in the UK should be probably just a one day, I believe, workshop. Right. But we're still figuring out the details right now.
Right. And then you spoke about your online, this new online kettlebell course. Can you share some of that info?
Yeah, so that is the project I'm most excited with right now. I would say it's more geared towards fitness professionals and coaches. The people like who gravitate towards the Czech kind of mindset will really appreciate it because, granted, athletes can watch it. It's great, but the level of detail and depth is just not for everyone. You know, it's... like, I really just want to give to those people who really want to learn progressions, regressions, who just don't, like, I'm not the person who's going to kick your butt. Like, I'm the person, like, I love teaching. I love being the technical coach and helping coaches develop their eyes. And then with that, which is what takes the most time, and if you have some program design principles, then you can create a badass workout or a badass training program. But it's mainly around, I would say, geared towards fitness professionals and especially – the Czech professionals, I think, I would say more so than not, just because Czech professionals, in my experience being one myself, are people who are so in love with you and really, really want to learn. Like, when I taught that Czech workshop for 2 days, it was one of the most enjoyable times I had teaching because they just really wanted to learn and they were there to learn and it was just a great experience. So it'll be a foundational program around mastering the basics of kettlebell lifting. But when I say mastering the basics, as you know, what makes the best the very best in any sport or anything in life is mastering those things and really loving the details. So I say basics, but even now I'm still drilling the basics myself. And I say that with all honesty. So it's for fitness professionals mastering the basics and it'll all be kettlebell focused.
Cool. How with the online course, is it a thing where you have certain stages of it? Is it like a 5-month program? You know, how does it work online? Is it just a thing where people can view any part of it at any time to learn a specific lifting technique?
So right now we're just implementing everything into the platform. And so what it's looking like, and there's going to be multiple programs, but at least this most foundational one, I'll package it in a few different packages. Like, for example, deadlifts, swings, cleans, snatches, which is kind of the developmental progression for those. And then like an overhead, which would be like presses, push presses, jerks, Turkish get-ups, windmills. And then like a third section of like squatting, lunging, horizontal pulling. They could purchase the full program, but also if they want to work in chunks. Right. And then once they go through this, like this has been such an undertaking because, you know, everyone's told me, you know, oh, you should do a sexy program like kettlebell flows and all this stuff. And maybe at some point, and I will do these more smaller, very focused programs, but I've told them every time, it's like, if you can't do a clean, if you don't know how to insert your hand in the bell without banging, if you don't know common errors and fixes for these movements, if you don't have some form of a movement check, as basic as it is, before you start, it's like, I'm not doing you any good as a coach. Mm-hmm. But after this program, I will certainly do, like, you know, kettlebell flows and advanced techniques and all sorts of kind of more solid or smaller programs. But this will be a large program if someone wants the full scope. Mm-hmm. But I know when they go through it as a coach and as a lifter, then my goal, hopefully someone wants to stick with me during their kettlebell journey. But if not, that's cool too. My goal is anyone who takes the program, no matter what program or even certification they do with kettlebells, even if it's not with me, whatever it is, that I've set them up for success, mm-hmm. and that they can hop into a group training class that uses kettlebells and they can lift and have more knowledge than even the instructor. Then I've done my job. So,
yeah. Do you know what? I mean, so obviously it's like it's aimed more for coaching, you know, for people that want to coach as well. And I wanted to say something on this. Something that, you know, kind of annoys me that people don't get this is that, you know, this understanding of mastery and how, what mastery really takes. And, you know, I remember when you speak to certain martial artists, they'll say, or even boxing coaches, like they sometimes have a boxer who's been fighting for 10 years and they take them on the pads and they say, you can't even jab properly. And they say, right, for the next 6 months, we're not going to do any punch except the jab. And the guy's like, the jab's such a basic punch. And he goes, yeah, and you haven't even mastered that yet. So, you know, if you want to get into mastery, to be able to master like one thing could take you so long. But for me, it's like being able to master those foundations that you're talking about. It's not even just kettlebell. It translates into everything because, like, for me, for martial arts, having quite a high skill set over the years in martial arts, that allowed me to allow that to translate into every single movement in life, because the mechanics of kettlebell lifting is the mechanics of life in general. So by them coming and doing like a kettlebell training program, it's not just kettlebells they're mastering, they're mastering movement, and movement translates into anything, because it's like, you know, what's his name, Michael Jordan. All right, he wasn't the best baseball player in the world, but he translated to baseball professionally very quickly. It's like, if you're good, you're good. If you can move, you can move. And so I think, you know, having something like that, you know, because that's not my kettlebells isn't my forte, but to have something like that online where people can master, you can master the basics in golf, you'll be able to master something else anyway, so it translates into everything. I think that's the beauty of kind of having something like that, because it translates into everything else. So just before we kind of close, what is, because you mentioned, you know, what you'd accomplished at 19, but I know you've got some other records, you know, recently. You're one of few people. Are you like the only American that has gotten to a certain level in kettlebell lifting? Is like the 36, or you tell me, I don't mess it up.
Yeah, yeah. So in 2017, I won the world championships in long cycle, and then I'm one of only, I think it's 5 or 4 Americans who's been able to achieve that high, one of the highest ranks master of sport in both clean and jerk, as well as biathlon, which is 10 minutes unbroken of jerks plus 10 minutes unbroken of snatches. Right. So so it's 20 minutes total lifting. You split it up by a few hours during the day. Jeez. So I'm one of the few guys, just I think maybe 4 or 5 of us, who have achieved that. And then I'm close. I'm 2 reps away from being the first North American to ever hit master of sport with the 40 kilos. So I've been 2 reps. I've come close 2 reps on 3 competitions.
Wow. So oh, my gosh.
More to get after on that.
Actually, we haven't touched. That is absolutely amazing. So even though I'm like bigging up my, you know, for all those that are listening, I'm not getting the kickbacks here on any of this stuff. But I just know mastery when I see it, you know, and I just think it's important. So I know most of this talk, we've been speaking a lot about your background, but, you know, I want to do a lot more talks where we get more into other things, more educational things. But I thought it was really important to kind of preface, you know, your background and how you work with people and your foundation, so people actually understand the type of person that they're actually listening to right now. So one last thing, actually, before we wrap up, Bulgarian yeah. bags. I've been seeing some of your videos on Instagram, and I was like, oh my gosh, these look so functional. I mean, to me, one of the most, I mean, other than the Swiss ball, which you can just do thousands of exercises on, and, you know, if you couldn't afford a gym, just buy a Swiss ball, you have enough to play around for years, especially if you've got a smart mind. But other than that, and the tornado ball, I've never, honestly, and I'm not saying this because I'm in front of you, I've never, ever seen something as functional as tornado ball and Swiss ball. I didn't think there was anything else on the market that could be like that until I saw you dropping this stuff with the Bulgarian bag. I have seen Bulgarian bags before, but I've just seen people just carry it on their shoulder and run. Nothing like what I've seen you do, rotational, centrifugal, I'll make up some other words soon, stuff. Tell me about this Bulgarian bag, and did you do any training on it? Did you kind of develop some of these techniques yourself?
The Bulgarian bag, honestly, is the kettlebell for sure is one of my favorite pieces. But the Bulgarian bag was developed by Coach Ivan. So the reason the Bulgarian bag was developed was so that he had a tool that he could take on the mats and train his wrestlers at the elite level. So every single movement that you do with the Bulgarian bag, I mean, it's great for fitness. I mean, it's phenomenal for fitness, but it was designed to train Olympians. And essentially what it does, very much like kettlebells, but in their own way, different tool, it makes amazing movers. Amazing. Like, you can train, I mean, from grip, rotational strength, rotational power, coordination, combination movements. The Bulgarian bag, you know, it's still in its very infancy stage. I've been using the bag for almost 10 years, but I would say only in the last 3 years. Mm. Yeah, I have one of the first ones that looks totally different than they have now. Mm. But I was using it for the vast majority of the time. I was using it as like a barbell, lunging with it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know until I took a level one certification the potential of what you can do with this thing. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to level two. And then now that's why I flew to spend 3 weeks in Boise. But the Bulgarian bag is only one of five, I don't even say training tools, training systems that Yvonne's developed. There's two full-blown complete levels of Bulgarian bag education that he's developed. There's one level currently of the ball, which you may have seen, the soupless ball.
Yeah.
So that would kind of be, you know, like fighters love that because I kind of, the analogy would almost kind of like be mitts. Speed endurance, very good for coordination, transition, amazing for cardiovascular conditioning. The grips aren't nearly as hard as the Bulgarian bag because you have handles. The Bulgarian bag is going to really gas your forearms, but from like a combination, different ranges of motion, changing levels. So the ball is much more a cardio and a speed and coordination tool, full-blown education system on that. Then he's also got three other full-blown systems that I barely knew about, and it blew my mind. One is called the Hurt system, which is the bands that you may have seen me do.
I've seen that around under your body. Yeah, that was crazy.
I'm barely scratching the surface on those. They can be used as a warm-up tool, a cool-down tool, a strength and power tool, you name it. And there's full-blown, there could be two easily full-blown days just on the bands. Mm. Then he's got a whole system around dummies, so all types of throw dummies.
Right.
Then he's got something called a gladiator wall. So the Bulgarian bag is really where we're starting, really trying to build the soupless education. And so that's the certifications that I'm teaching. Right. And I always tell people it's like, people are skeptical at first because it's a new tool. It's kind of like where kettlebells were 20 years ago. Right. 20 years ago, Pablo plus years ago, when Pablo brought kettlebells to the United States, people were like, what is this? It's strange. I don't understand it. But now, still people don't know how to use it to a large extent. But every gym, every spa, everything is sold on the idea of why they're functional and why their members want it. Mm. I truly, truly believe that in the next 10 years, maybe sooner, the Bulgarian bag will be as big, if not bigger, than the kettlebell. It is such in its infancy stage, and I always say all I need to do is just get it in someone's hand. And someone like you especially, which hopefully when I come to Europe we can do some fun training together, as soon as you put it in your hand, I don't even have to say anything. I could show you a few basic movements. You're intelligent enough, like, and you'll just feel it. Mm. And it's been the easiest thing to sell because I don't even have to sell it. I believe in it. People have their own authentic experience with it. As soon as people touch it, the movements, the combination, the flows, it feels amazing. So the Bulgarian bag and all the tools are really fantastic and fun. Most importantly, they're fun.
Yeah. So I definitely want to, you know, when we have our part two, like how Paul's having his part two with Aubrey Marcus and other people, we'll have our part two, the return of Mike Salim. See, I'm going to go mess up your name. So I'm going to say it again.
Salemi.
Salemi. Right, yeah. When you come over, yeah, we're definitely going to have a part two where we talk about, in more depth, about how you integrate in these bags into work with your clients, especially the martial art guys and stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of it for me. I kind of want to just get people into this sort of stuff, but, you know, I'm really excited to kind of talk more about, you know, those tools that you spoke about, and then also, you know, next time talk more about spirituality in your own life and how that can be implemented in other people's practices and stuff. So, very grateful for you, you know, sharing your time with me. And yeah, you know, before we go, where can people find you?
So the best place on Instagram is mike.salemi. I'm probably most active on Instagram, but also my website is mikesalemi.io, not .com, .io. Right. And then I just started a Facebook business page, and it's just Mike Salemi's page. And so I'll be updating that more. And but honestly, Warren, thank you so much for having me. This has been a pleasure. I've been wanting to connect with you for a while, and I know we exchanged some comments on social media. So honestly, from my heart, man, thank you so much for having me.
And just before we, I'm so blessed and thankful as well. But just before we end, can you spell your surname for those that are actually searching for you?
Yes, Salemi. S-A-L-E-M-I.
Cool. All right, guys. Peace and love. Until next time. Hope you guys really enjoyed that podcast. Slightly different, you know, I'm always wanting to cross every single subject when it comes to working with people. You know, I like to interview people sometimes because it's not just about me, it's about the information. So whether it's a platform for me, a platform for colleagues or people that are in the same fields, it's all about growth. So, you know, that's why I wanted to get this guy in, and I hope you guys really enjoyed it. I found it quite interesting. I know a lot of it was about his background, but I thought that was important because part of this is, as you may have heard me speak about before, the hero's journey. And you know, this is a good example of the hero's journey. For those of you who are not familiar with that, I would suggest you go and get or look at or research Joseph Campbell, who talks a lot about the hero's journey. And the hero's journey is what we all go through in life, and we go through some form of pain. Then we have to go through some form of inner reflection, which is often called the innermost cave. Then we get to a state of ordeal. We always have to have some sort of challenge in our lives. And then if we can get through the challenge or ordeal, then we get to, you know, the blissful part, you know, this, you know, greatness. And, you know, we always have to, you know, when people talk about the baptism of fire. And, you know, I really thought it was great to kind of get someone like him on, who's so practical in his application of what he's learnt. So you can actually see that it's not just about knowing stuff, it's actually about doing stuff. You know, one of the things I always say is, if you read 1,000 books on martial arts but never practice, you're not a martial artist. You're just someone who's read a lot of books. So that's why I wanted to get this guy on, and hopefully we'll get him on, you know, many more times. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed it, and until next time, stay healthy, happy, whole, and whole being health.